In this session, we're going to discuss book synopsis. Let me just remind you that there are four steps in Bible study. The first step is to understand biblical truth. In order to do that, I have suggested there are seven methods you might use. I've already given you the first method, which is historical survey. This is the second method of understanding truth. It is book synopsis. When contractors build a house, they do not build one complete room and then construct another complete room. Imagine carpenters, plumbers, and electricians building a finished bathroom first, including all the plumbing and all the fixtures. Then they add one complete room after another until they finish the house. That's the way some people study the Bible. They take a verse in a book or a small portion within the book and they study it in detail, adding the verses around it until they have completed the book. Well, the way contractors build a house is the way you should study the Bible. Contractors begin with the whole. Stakes are put in the ground to determine the outer limits of the house. The foundation is poured, and all the rooms are framed in before any particular room is built. In a similar fashion, you need to begin with the whole. The basic whole unit in the Bible is individual books. After you grasp the whole book as a unit, then you can delve in depth into the details of it. In his book, How to Study the Bible for Greatest Profit, R.A. Torrey said, quote, "This method of study is the most thorough, the most difficult, and the one that yields the largest and most permanent results." End of quote. After a historical survey of a biblical book, the next step is a synopsis of it. The English word synopsis means general view. In book synopsis, you take a picture of a book with a wide angle lens before you take pictures with a micro lens. Book synopsis is the penthouse view, not the manhole view. The definition of a book synopsis is simply a brief review or summary of the whole book. It is thinking through the natural literary units of a book. It formulates a tentative concept of the message of the book. It is important to note that a book of the Bible must be analyzed by its natural literary units, not chapter and verse. This is very important. Chapters and verses were added years after the Bible was written. It is a piece of literature that has natural literary units. It's those natural literary units that you want to pay attention to, not chapters and verses. One author says chapter and verses artificially obscure the continuation of thought, and he is right. One pastor was a little more emphatic. In a sermon, he said, "I believe the text of Scripture is inspired by God, breathed out by Him. But I believe the particular chapter divisions were put in by the devil. Many times they come right at a place where they actually obscure the truth." Well, that might be a bit of an extreme statement, but it does make the point, doesn't it? What then are the natural units of a book? The answer to that question depends on the type of book. In a historical book, in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, the natural literary unit is the individual narrative or story. In the historical books, particularly in the Old Testament, chapter divisions are often divided by those individual narratives, which is a good thing. Unfortunately, however, there are times when that is not true, especially in the Gospels. So the first type of literary unit is the narrative or the story. Another is the paragraph. In the epistles of the New Testament, the literary unit is the paragraph. For example, take any of Paul's epistles. The literary unit may also be a discourse, or a narrative plus a discourse, or a narrative plus a parable, or a psalm, or a proverb. There are all kinds of natural literary units, but the two most common is simply a story or a paragraph. If you were to walk to the top of the Washington Monument to get a bird's eye view of the Lincoln Memorial, the White House, and other sites surrounding the area, you would have to climb 898 steps. Well, fortunately, you do not have to climb that many steps to get a bird's eye view of a biblical book. Let me give you three. Step one, read the book. In our age of poor readers, automation, TV, computers, reading has fallen onto hard times. The problem is compounded by the fact that most Americans live in the fast lane and reading takes time. There's no substitute for reading the Bible. And when it comes to Bible study, there's no substitute for repeated reading of the same material. It may not take as much time as you think. Many of the books of the New Testament can be read in 15 minutes or less. In some of the epistles of the New Testament, if you printed them in the newspaper, they would fill no more than two columns of newsprint. In fact, the largest books in the New Testament are Luke and Acts. Either one can be read by an average reader in about 2 hours. Now, that seems like a long time to you, doesn't it? But how many evenings have you spent watching TV or working on the computer for 2 hours or less? I submit our problem with Bible study may be just at this point. We do not even read it. A mother was trying to get her 8-year-old daughter, Mary, to learn her Sunday school lesson. At length, she took the Bible from the dresser drawer and said, "Come, Mary, I will help you learn your lesson. Then you can go back and play." Mary replied, "All right, Mother, but let's study out of Grandpa's Bible. It's much more interesting than yours." "But Mary," the mother objected, "they're exactly alike." "Oh," Mary replied, "I thought Grandpa's Bible might be more interesting than yours. He certainly reads it more than you do." Ouch. That's our problem. We just don't read it as much as Grandpa does. Unfortunately, that's a commentary on all too many believers today. The biblical approach to Bible study begins with the right person doing the studying. Remember when we discussed the qualifications and we talked about spiritual qualifications and intellectual qualifications? Well, the next step in learning the Bible, to study it especially, is learning to read and reread it. As soon as the children of Israel entered the promised land, they immediately, quote, "wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses," Joshua 8:32. Then Joshua, quote, "read all the law. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded which Joshua did not read before the congregation of Israel, with women, the little ones, and the strangers who were among them." Joshua 8:34 through 35. After that initial reading, the word written in stone reminded all of Israel to read it. Keep in mind, that Moses was the first to write. He wrote the first five books of the Bible. As soon as those books were completed, the Israelites were in the land and provision was made for all to read the scripture. Note, as soon as those first five books were completed, the Israelites were given the opportunity to read them. The Bible ends with this promise, quote, "Blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of this prophecy and keeps those things which are written in it, for the time is near," Revelation 1:3. In this verse, reading is public reading. But the point is, God wants for people to hear his word. From the beginning of the Bible, that Moses situation we talked about in Joshua, God made it clear that he wants his people to read and or hear what he wrote. He wrote his word by books. Did he not therefore intend that we read it a book at a time? From a practical point of view, it is indispensable that a particular book be read and reread to ascertain its historical survey and a book synopsis. At this stage of study, you should read a book of the Bible all the way through at one sitting and do that several times. G. Campbell Morgan said, quote, "I've always advocated that beginners should commence with the New Testament and get a bird's eye view of each book, the simplest method being taking a book," and he says, say the Gospel of Matthew, "and reading straight through at one sitting and doing it repeatedly until the general movement of the book is grasped." End of quote. Now, Morgan suggested maybe you start with the Gospel of Matthew. That may be a bit long. I suggest maybe you start and cut your teeth on a shorter book like James or Ephesians or Colossians. As you read, you should look for a couple of things. For example, you should look for subjects that are covered. While it is true that an author has one main subject, the overall subject of the book, it's also true that several different subjects support that main subject. So, read a biblical book thinking about the subjects that are covered. While you may want to jot down a note or two at this stage, meticulous study is not the point. As you read, get the feel of the book. Notice in a general way what subjects are discussed. For example, as you begin reading the book of Nehemiah, you would quickly discover that he is concerned about the situation in Jerusalem. He becomes so burdened and concerned for the people in the city and the wall around it that he seeks permission to journey to Jerusalem to do something about the situation there. The king grants him permission. He travels to Jerusalem, makes a midnight ride around the wall. He soon gathers the people about him and challenges them to work on the wall. Nehemiah records in detail the work done on the wall and especially the work on the gates. But no sooner do they begin the work on the wall than opposition breaks out. The opposition is first from without, but it is also from within. Finally, through sheer determination and persistence, Nehemiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem complete the wall in record time. In such a fashion, your synopsis should continue as you think through the rest of the book of Nehemiah. Or take another book. As you begin to read the book of James, you quickly discover that he discusses a number of different trials. He begins with trials, jumps to temptation. He talks about the word, prejudice, works. Remember that passage, faith without works is dead. Then in chapter 3, he talks about the tongue, unjust treatment, sickness, and in just such a fashion. You are just moving through the book of James, noting the subjects that are covered. The next thing you should do as you read the book is notice that subject changes. On the second or third reading, give more careful attention to the specific places where the subject changes. Jot down a reference or two. That might be helpful. More meticulous and accurate study will be done later. At this point, just noting the subject changes is useful, especially for what is done in the next phase. Consider Nehemiah again, only this time, instead of just noticing the subjects covered, notice where the subjects change. Nehemiah's concern for the situation in Jerusalem is in chapter 1. He becomes so burdened and concerned for the people in the city and the wall around it that he sought permission of the king to journey to Jerusalem and do something about the situation there. The king grants him permission. He travels to Jerusalem and makes a midnight ride around the wall. He soon gathers the people around him and challenges them to work. That's chapter 2. Nehemiah records in detail the work done on the wall and especially the work done on the gates. Chapter 3. No sooner did they get the wall built when opposition breaks out. The opposition is first from without, chapter 4, but it's also from within, chapter 5. Finally, through sheer determination and persistence, Nehemiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem complete the wall in record time, chapter 6. So all I've done is just give a brief summary of, in this case, the natural units fall into chapters, so I just noted the summary of each of the first six chapters. There are 13 chapters in the book of Nehemiah. I just illustrated it with the first six. In the case of James, he discusses trials in chapter 1, verses 2 to 12, temptation in chapter 1, 13 to 18, the word in chapter 1, verses 19 to 27, prejudice in 2, 1 to 13, works 2 to 14 to 26, the tongue in 3, 1 to 12, wisdom in 3, 13 through 18, conflict in 4, 1 to 10, judging others in 12 and 4, 11 and 12, a business trip in 4, 13 to 17, unjust treatment in 5, 1 to 12, and sickness in 5, 13 to 18. So again, I've just run through the book of James, noted the subject changes, and this time noted down where those subject changes take place. The other thing you should look for as you're reading is the main subject. Along with noting the subjects covered and where the subjects change, begin to think about what the main subject of the book might be. At this level of study, the conclusions are tentative at best, but it is valuable to have in mind, even as you begin reading the book, what the overall subject might be. For example, in the case of Nehemiah, it is obvious that the first several chapters revolve around the rebuilding of the wall. You might conclude the subject is just that, the rebuilding of the wall. But be careful. That's premature. The wall was completed in chapter 6, but there are 7 more chapters in the book of Nehemiah. The overall subject of Nehemiah must take the last 7 chapters in consideration. So obviously, although the building of the wall is a major part of Nehemiah, there is more to Nehemiah than just building the wall. There's also the repopulation of the city and even the repeated restoration of the city. Thus, the book of Nehemiah is not about the rebuilding of the wall or even the repopulation of the city of Jerusalem, but the continual spiritual restoration. In the context of the Old Testament, this is even more apparent. Zerubbabel came and restored. Ezra came and restored. Nehemiah came and restored things twice. Determining the subject of the book of James is difficult. He seems to jump from one subject to another. Various topics for an overall subject have been suggested, including faith, works, and maturity. It is significant that James begins and ends the book with the subject of trials. Look at 1:2 and 5:13. That seems to fit the results of the historical survey, namely that the original recipients were experiencing trials. At any rate, the first step in this book synopsis is to just read the book. And as you do, look for the subjects that are covered, where the subjects are changing, and you might start thinking about the main overall subject of the entire book. Let me suggest a second thing to do. After you've read the book all the way through it, one sitting, several times, how about going through the book and give a title to each of those subject changes, each of those natural literary units. To obtain a more specific overview of the book, the units of the book need to be accurately identified and summarized. A simple and effective way to do this is to title each unit. So you need to start with just something simple like identification. Determine the number of literary units. In historical material, the unit is each narrative or story. In didactic material, like the epistles, the unit is the paragraph. Determining the Determining the narrative unit is done by reading the book and determining the beginning and the end of each story. The paragraph units of any book of the Bible can be determined by either looking at the Bible that prints paragraphs as paragraphs or designating them in some other fashion. The New King James Version, for example, prints the number of the first verse of a paragraph in bold type. It must be remembered that paragraphs are not in the original manuscripts. They are added later by editors and translators. Some translators tend to have longer paragraphs than others, but in didactic material, just note the paragraphs. For a beginner, the easiest way to do that is to get a translation that's printed in paragraphs or get the New King James Version and notice that the number of the verse in bold, if the number of the verse is in bold print, that's a signal that that's the beginning of the paragraph, according to the translators of the New King James Version. All right. After you have determined the various units, you've identified them, then you need to go back and title each one. This process will help you refine your conclusions. You will discover that your first observations are not always the most accurate. Most change their conclusions several times through the process of studying a book of the Bible. List the units and title each unit on a piece of paper. The great advantage of this process is that it helps you to remember. Reading and rereading a book of the Bible yields a lot of fruit, but even the best minds will forget at least some of the details after a period of time. By recording your findings, you will remember them for use later. Here is an illustration from James. Write down on a piece of paper the reference, 1:1, and then beside that write, salutation. On the next line under that, write 1:2-12. And on that line, after that reference, write the word trials. On the next line, write another reference, 1:13-18. And after that, on the same line, write temptation. On the next line, write 1:19-20. And on that same line, write the righteousness of God. On the next line, write the reference, 1:21-27. On that same line, write doing the word. On the next line, write 2:1-13. And on that same line, write partiality. On the next line, write 2:14-26. And after that, faith without works. On the next line, write 3:1-12. And after that, the tongue. On 3:13-18, write wisdom. On the next line, 4:1-10, the cause of conflict. On the next line, 4:11-12, judging. On the next line, 4:13-17, planning. On the next line, 5:1-12, unjust treatment. On the next line, 5:13-18, write sickness. And finally, on the next line, write 5:19-20. And on that line, write restoration. Now, that is laboriously said, but it's easily seen. What you would have are 15 lines on a page. You might even want to number them. And besides each number, write the reference. And then beside the reference, write a title. In this case, I used salutation, trials, temptation, the righteousness of God, doing the word, partiality, faith without works, the tongue, wisdom, the cause of conflict, judging, planning, unjust treatment, sickness, and restoration. Those are the titles of the units of the book of James. So, in doing a book synopsis, read the book, and then isolate the units and give a title to each of the units. That's basically the book synopsis. The third and last step is read what others have written. You should do your own work first, but to check your accuracy as well as gain some additional insights, see what others have said. The introductory section of a commentary, especially the more technical commentaries, often give a synopsis of the book. Some call it just that. Others call it analysis. Commentaries and the introductory section to each biblical book in a study Bible gives an outline. If that outline is detailed enough, then you have a unit-by-unit study of the book. But even so, those outlines form some sort of a synopsis of the book. So, if you don't do anything else, get a good study Bible. I've recommended several. And read the introduction to the book of a Bible before you start reading that book. So, to sum up what I've said in this session, after doing a historical survey, the next step in studying a book is getting a synopsis of it. Having done a historical survey and a book synopsis, you now have a feel for the situation that provoked the author to write and a general idea of all he has had to say. That helps you understand each individual literary unit through the book. It also helps keep you in context. At the same time, there is a sense in which the general idea is tentative. As the various literary units are analyzed, this initial concept may be altered. So each literary unit needs to be carefully analyzed. That is the book synopsis.